The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
From beautiful Burbank, California, this is the Knapsack Files. I'm Ken Knapsack for a very wonderful special edition of the Knapsack File. And today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/the Knapsack Files. That's right. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are here at a wonderful intersection, Burbank, California, and I haven't done an interview in a while. I haven't sat down and got deep and asked some probing questions about life, the universe, and everything. And now we get a chance to do it with a good friend of mine who has worked in this business for the last couple of years. We had a chance to work together at Screen Junkies, but he is a multi-talented man with, I'm sure we're going to learn, a wonderful, interesting story. It is Adam Halavik.
Wow. That was a very warm intro.
A lot of words.
That just made me sweat so hard.
A lot of words there.
You nailed that. You're something special.
Oh, no, you are, sir. All right, so I'm going to start here with your name.
Mm-hmm.
I want this on record.
Okay.
Now, I've known you now for a few years, but the first time I saw you, met you, got to get familiar with your beautiful face, was Schmoes Know over at the AfterBuzz Studios.
Yeah.
You came by, so I was the announcer, live from Burbank or whatever, you know, doing that bullshit.
That's my favorite bit, come on.
I always ask, because I was a stand-up comedy host for a long time, too, so it'd be like, hey, what do you want, what's your name, what's your intro, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, H-L-A-V-A-C, I'm Knapsack. That P and Z confuse a lot of people.
Sure.
But relatively easy. So, all right, I look at it. I figure the H, we're not talking to like Halavik. So I'm like asking. So I say Halavik.
Yeah.
And I think you're saying I'm within like 90% accuracy.
You're like 99.9% accurate.
Like Mark Ellis can never get it.
Mark Ellis, I love him, but what a dumpster. He can never get it right. Halavik, Halavak. I'm like, come on, Mark. You've known me for like 4 years now. So how hard is it?
I want to hear, and I'm going to cut this out later, and I'm going to make it my ringtone.
Perfect.
For everybody. Not just when you text me. Everybody. How do you say it?
Well, so, context.
Yes.
The name comes from the Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
My family came here in the early 80s.
Right.
In the proper way it's supposed to be pronounced, because of the accents on some of the letters, it's Halavač.
Halavač.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, but when my grandparents came here, they never added the H after the C, so it became Halavik.
Halavik.
And I think that's what confuses people, is it's V-A-C, but it sounds like Vic, V-I-C or V-I-K.
Yeah.
And then the H-L throws people for a loop. They're like, Halavik.
Halavik.
Yeah.
So I say Halavik.
I mean, that's close enough.
So Halavik.
Yeah.
Halavik.
Yeah.
All right. See? I'm going to end this interview. The interview's done.
Hey, I had a great time. Thanks for the beer and thanks for the water.
Halavik. 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 I'm going to say it a few times. I'll mess it up a few times more publicly.
And if you see me and you go like, hey, Halavač, I'll be like, I'm going to hug you right now. I hope you know that.
Well, so technically, Knapsack is Knapsack.
Yeah.
And that's...
is it Polish?
It's Circassian.
Oh.
So my grandfather is Hamid Dmitry Knapsack. And still alive, 93 years old in Anaheim, California. My grandmother's still alive. Irina Olmenchenko was her maiden name. Ukrainian.
Yeah.
So I understand. So when my folks came over, my dad was, you know, born in Austria on the way over, and they hit Ellis Island, that whole classic story in 51.
Yeah.
My dad's name is Al, A-L. He has no full name or middle name. His birth name is Ali, O-L-I.
Oh, okay.
But they kind of hit the shores and were like, you know what? Let's just make it easier on you.
Yeah, well, my grandpa's first name is Jan, which is J-A-N, which translates to John. But when you come here, everyone says Jan.
Yeah.
And when my grandpa would walk up and they would say, Jan, a man. They were so confused. But yeah, I know. It's like it's those European, like anything that's like outside of an American name, people are like, how do you spell this? It's like, come on, it's not that hard.
You're not that hard, but I get it. P and the Z. So here you are. You're over here. You were born here?
I was born in San Diego.
San Diego.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, were you born in America?
Are you American?
Are you American?
Is the government listening to
this? You're like, San Diego, jerk.
Yeah, bro.
I'm as American as they get.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, which makes sense because you are kind of Mr. San Diego, especially when it comes to San Diego Comic-Con time.
Oh, man, yeah.
You are the number one resource for can you get me in?
Into Hall H. Yeah. No, that's very true. And it's now happened on multiple occasions. And it's
Too many.
And I don't know if it's going to happen now, but yeah, many, many, many occasions of can you get me into Hall H or how do I get into this party? Yeah. Both from people professionally in the industry and,
yes,
and people who are my friends who are like, hey, can you hook me up? And I'm like, I can't even get in.
But I'm going to stop you there,
yeah,
because this past year,
yeah, yeah,
you got me into the Geek and Sundry party.
Yeah, that's true.
And so you can't tell me that's
when I was on good terms with them.
But my point is, and maybe, all right, this year, I don't even think I'm going to be there this year.
Oh, don't tell me that.
But you're a victim of your own success then. Because that was how you were literally like, we brought you on, I think it was for a Comic-Con preview show, right? On
Schmoes? Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, cool.
Well, that's oddly enough, that's kind of how I met Christian was, they had like seen a fan trailer that I did, they really liked it, but then they put out a tweet of like, right, how do I get into Hall H? Or does anybody know a connection? I was like, well, I do. Yeah. And then back in my head, I'm like, you better hook it up if I'm going to get you into Hall H. And
yeah,
that's how I met Copster and JTE. That was the first time I met those guys. Right. And then it all just
kind of... the year that they slept on the sidewalk? I think that was the year they slept
so
on the sidewalk.
I believe so.
Oh, gosh.
And then it was like, hey, I can get you in. We can just go here. And they were like, son of a bitch. So it was good. It worked out.
That was the year because I was partying at the Nerd HQ party at Petco.
And
And we were up there on like the third level looking down at the people waiting in line. And Copster.
Those two bastards are sleeping.
Yeah, and Copster. No, they weren't even sleeping. They didn't. The sweet relief of sleep hadn't hit them yet.
Oh,
it
God.
Was JT and Copster looking up at us partying.
Oh,
not
no.
Knowing they were staring at us, but going, those, it was like Titanic. It was steerage and first class. And that was an interesting year at Comic-Con.
Those poor bastards.
Talk to me about growing up in San Diego, because that is kind of a wonderful cliche.
San Diego. So this is the thing about San Diego, and I didn't realize this until I moved, was I didn't appreciate San Diego enough, but I think that happens to a lot of people who live in their birthplace for too long. They don't, you know, sort of go outside of that boundary. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I moved to LA that I was like, man, San Diego is so mellow, so chillax.
Yeah.
They love their surfing. They love their football, their bars, their Padres and their former Chargers. and that's sort of the San Diego life. Like everybody just likes to go out to the beach, have a surf, have a beer, have a taco and
fucking kick it, bro. Yeah, hang down there
downtown,
Fifth Street there.
Oh, yeah. On 4th, 5th, Market, the Gas Lamp. I mean, there's so many cool places in downtown San Diego.
I went there my first time in 1988.
That's the year after I was born.
Year after you were born. So little one-year-old Adam was down there in San Diego when I saw the Padres defeat the Pirates 4-3 in 10 innings on a Chris Brown single up the middle. Jose Lean hit his second home run of his season that year.
I don't know what you just said, but
that sounded real hot. Yes, it is. It is. Benito Santiago behind the plate for the Padres. But I was down there, and I had a very, you know, I'm young. I was about 12 then at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like not the best feeling of San Diego, and it changed dramatically.
Downtown was, I'll just say it, downtown was a dump back then. Like, a lot of stuff was not built out. There was a lot of homeless downtown. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until really the mid to, I wouldn't say the, yeah, like mid to mid-ish 90s that it really took off. They really built out Horton Plaza. They put a Planet Hollywood in there. That was my jam. And inside of Planet Hollywood, they had a capsule with a red Power Ranger suit and then the T2 Arnold Schwarzenegger thing. And I was like, I'm all about Planet Hollywood. And then they got rid of it. So there goes my childhood memories.
There goes your childhood memories down there. At what point, you are an interesting case because you are in entertainment,
mm-hmm.
but you are very well-rounded, where you're a good host and entertainer. You're knowledgeable about a lot of nerd things.
Yeah.
But you have a great amount of skills behind the scenes,
yeah.
and that's where I've got to work with you for about a year.
Yeah, I've been there for 2 years now.
Over at Screen Junkies, where you were handling a lot of the graphic designs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And trust me, that's more than just knowing Photoshop. So how did you come to that? Because did you want to grow up and be an entertainer, but also your parents were like, learn computers, kid?
It started with a little movie called Star Wars.
I've heard of it.
1997.
Film. Oh, my.
I was 9 years old.
Yes.
No, I was 9 years old. My mom took me to see A New Hope when the re-release came out,
mm-hmm.
and I legitimately think that at some point my brain turned inside out, flipped around, and then did it back again.
Wow.
And I was like, I gotta make movies. I want to make movies so bad.
Wow.
So from about, I think from about 9 to sort of 12, maybe like 12 to 13, I didn't really pursue it. I just really fell in love with movies.
Just like daydreamed about.
Yeah, I daydreamed about movies, and I had action figures, and I would always like make up little action sequences and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I think by the time I turned, I think around 13, 14 was when I got my first camera for my birthday, and that was like, we're doing it.
Really?
And, yeah, and I just started making short films, like little Star Wars shorts with my friends. We would do these like just mock-up lightsaber fights.
Yeah.
So the way I got into it was I needed to figure out how to make a lightsaber, and it was like, I don't know. This thing is on tape. Like, how do I even put it in a computer? So I just, like, Google was young, but I started researching and figuring out, like, okay, how do I transcode footage from a DV tape to a computer? I found like a rip copy of Photoshop. And then what you would do is you would take it into Premiere, which I was able to get through like a family friend. Yeah. You would take the video clip, you would export it as an actual film strip file.
Right.
So you would literally get an image that had like every single frame. You go into Photoshop and one frame by one frame paint it in.
You lost me at Google. And here you are, probably with the early 2000s doing this.
Yeah, I was like 13 or 14. And so that was like, that's how I started. And then on top of that, I started doing a lot of photo manipulations. Mm. So I would take actors' faces and put them on superheroes.
Oh, wow.
And put them online.
Did you have a GeoCities website? Did I see your work? No.
Surprisingly, the craziest thing happened. So like in 2003, when Henry Cavill was first auditioning for, I think it was like the J.J. Abrams Superman movie.
Yeah.
I remember like reading, it was like him and Matt Bomer and a few other people. I took a photo of Christopher Reeve and this like black and white headshot of Henry Cavill. I cut it out. Mm. I put it on Christopher Reeve's body. I colorized it. I put it out there into the internet. It somehow made it into a forum that was like, I don't know if it was Henry Cavill's official website or if it was like a fan site. Henry Cavill actually saw it, and he responded in the message board. Now, mind you, this is like 2003, 2004. Henry Cavill did the movie Jim Caviezel, Count of Monte Cristo probably at that point. So he was like a young actor.
Right.
So that was a trip. And then, you know, obviously 10 years later, he gets cast as Superman, so that was cool. But that's really how I started, was like photoshopping, you know, actors' heads on superhero bodies. And then it got into fan trailers. And while I was doing fan trailers at the same time, I was making these like, going out to Borrego Springs and making these Star Wars shorts.
This is impressive, and it shows. So going back to say 9 years old, and that's a different soapbox. But the fact that you know the Star Wars special editions can at times be maligned, and people want, you know, Lucas, why'd you do that?
Right.
But I always say, because I hear your story comes up a lot. Maude Garrett's an example too of someone giant Star Wars fan, host Star Wars shows. It began in 1997 with the special editions.
For sure,
that was your Star Wars. I love the generational stories like that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
all right. So I was pulled into Star Wars in 83. Jedi wanted to. I want to be George Lucas, and I would daydream about Episode 7 because I was going to write it and star and direct in it.
Yeah.
But the difference is, you grabbed a camera and did it. Where did that drive come from?
I think honestly the drive came from me just really wanting to sort of know what that felt like to make something that, granted, you know, back in 2003, 2004, YouTube hadn't existed yet. So there was really nobody who would see it.
Yeah.
But it was fun because my friends and I, we would get together, we would make these little things, and it was like, We'll put it on a big screen TV. We'll get our parents, and you know, my friend would get his parents. We'd all go to one house and we'd watch it together. And we had a great time. Like the parents would make popcorn and ice cream and snacks and stuff. So it kind of became our little like our fun weekend projects. That kind of felt like we were just making movies.
Yeah.
On like a, I don't know, maybe like every 3 months we'd go make something new. So I think that really drove it, was like, wow, our parents are enjoying this. We're making entertaining content.
Right.
Let's keep doing it. And it kind of rolled all the way into high school. I kept doing it. And then in my senior year, I took a multimedia class and I produced a couple shorts. One of them was like a Superman short film. That was like our final project. And I remember the teacher was like, guys, because everybody, okay, it's high school, right?
Yeah.
It's a multimedia class. You have free reign to do whatever you want. You can like listen to music. You could
leave campus, right?
You could jerk off if you wanted to.
I mean, God bless you for doing that at school.
Exactly.
Not get in trouble. Because I had video production in the 90s, same thing. We had literally a pass. We could leave campus and go shoot stuff.
Exactly. And so like I was one of those people who was like, I want to utilize all this gear. Like there are cheap dollies, cheap cameras, but it had like a recording studio. It had all these Mac computers. And I was like, perfect.
Yeah.
Let's make something really cool, really high concept. So we made this like Superman short film. It's on my YouTube page if you want to see me in like 2006 looking ridiculous. But the cool thing about it was, I remember the teacher said, because he had to watch them all before we presented them to class. And he says, guys, this next thing we're going to watch, I have a really strong feeling that the guys that made this are going to go far in the industry.
Yeah.
So it's like, I've always had these sort of like motivational pushes from people.
Yeah.
And it started with family. It kind of eventually moved into YouTube doing fan trailers. And then it came from teachers. And mm-hmm. it just sort of was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to continue doing this. So I learned how to use Photoshop, After Effects, Premiere. And I was like, I'm just going to learn how to be a multi-talented artist. And it paid off. Like, I got to make I got to take part in a web series, which was based off of Heroes. We called it Villains. And we like flipped the whole thing around. It was great. So I basically just got to, I taught myself these skill sets, and then I got to apply them to all these projects that I made. Mm-hmm. And then answered a Craigslist ad and got into visual effects, which was crazy.
Did you, wow. That's the only time, you know, you could go to a Craigslist ad and get the wrong thing, man. Did at any other point, I mean, again, we go back to, in general, it starts at 9, it kicks in high gear, 13, 14. At any other time, was there any other passion you felt about going after? Or was this it?
I was a big hockey fan as a kid.
Oh.
I loved hockey. I played ice. I played a lot of sports, but ice hockey has always been my favorite. It's my go-to. I love it so much. There was, I think, a point, but I think it was very, very small, where I was like, maybe hockey would be something I'd love to do. I also love to draw, but to me, that was always like, oh, man, drawing is such a long-term commitment, and it's very repetitive practice, and sometimes it's a lot of the same type of stuff, whereas when you're filmmaking, it can be anything. It can be like any genre, any sort of style like that you want to try to go out there and mimic.
Right.
So short-term, hockey, very short-term. But it's pretty much always been like, I want to make movies and I want to tell stories.
I love that because I went around the block. Baseball was my hockey for you. I swore I was going to play for the New York Yankees. Mm-hmm. That got me to seventh grade.
Yeah.
but yeah, you know, 2 or 3 years old, I was talking into microphones with my dad. 7, 8, 9, I had a little tape deck and I was recording radio shows in my room.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. For me, the journey went... I other things that I love, stand-up, writing, all those things are there, and they're part of what I like. But it was weird. I had to take this long journey to get back to what was in my heart at 9.
Yeah.
It sounds like, fortunately, you found it early and committed to it.
I did. And I think the only thing that sort of derailed me was a couple times in high school.
Girls.
100%. Girls and friends. And even my job, because I've kind of been working mostly since I was like 14, 15.
Right.
And I took a vacation last year for a week, and that was the first vacation I'd taken in 15 years, which I know to some people is like, what the hell? And to me, it's kind of became normal.
You went to Europe, right?
Yeah, for my 30th.
You know what's funny?
Mm.
I saw you post some pictures.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't even know you for a long period of time, but I was around you enough every day where you're such a hardworking dude. You're also one of the first there, last out type of guy. And when I saw that, and I don't work with you every day anymore, I was like, I wonder if everything's all right with Adam. Like, did he just
intervention?
Did he run away?
Yeah.
So good for you for doing it.
Yeah, like, man.
So had girls derail you?
It's my own fault because I let it derail me.
Of course.
And there was one particular girl that I like fell in love with, and I was like determined to, you know, get her attention and have this whole I played up this whole fantasy in my head, and you know, high school things happen and you find out who your real friends are and all that sort of stuff. But so yeah, that sort of derailed me. And then I ended up being with this girl for a couple years, and we broke up, and it was weird because when we broke up, I was literally 6 weeks away from shooting my first feature film.
Wow.
And I think that was really motivation. That was like a huge sort of like eye opener and motivation for me to be like, okay, I have no commitments right now.
Yeah.
I wasn't in school. I didn't have a girlfriend. And I was like, okay, if I really want to pursue this thing and really tackle this dream of mine, then I need to just fire in all cylinders and go.
Yeah.
And I did.
Lock S foils in attack position.
Oh, they were locked.
That's a Star Wars reference, Adam.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you get
those S foils were.
So,
how dare you question my knowledge of Star Wars?
Gosh, no. You got a great Star Wars shirt on right now, actually. So when does it go from something you want to do to something you are doing? And you and I, even at my age, slightly older than you, a little more gray in my beard, the goals can always change. Circumstances can always change. And we can come back and talk about that. But to move up from San Diego, to leave your home and the fish and chips by the port over there, you know?
Yeah.
when did that click in? And because we all can dream and we all can pursue it.
Yeah.
I try to play baseball, right?
Yeah.
Take me to that moment where you're like, this is it.
Yeah. Well, so leading up to that, so I had done the web series for a couple of years, and then we went to go see District 9, and my friend had this great idea for a new movie. He was inspired by District 9. Mm-hmm. So we shot our first feature. It didn't end up going that well. And then I had started doing this visual effects job in San Diego originally, mm-hmm. and was converting movies to 3D. I did Shrek and Transformers and a few other movies, and I thought, okay, cool. I finally have gone to the point where I got a real job in the industry in San Diego, which is unheard of.
Right.
Unheard of. The company's no longer there. They're in Toronto, I think, now.
Your story could have been a lot different.
You're absolutely right. And I'm sure we'll get into it. But there was an opportunity to come to LA to work in Burbank for a different company doing the same thing.
Right.
And I thought, okay, here's a moment. I can either completely commit to moving to Los Angeles and just say, F it, I'm going to go for it and pray that it works out. Or I can stay in San Diego and just sort of keep working for this company and not know where it's going to go. And if it doesn't work out, go try other jobs. Mm-hmm. And the more I sort of kept talking about it in my head, I convinced myself like, okay, look, I love making content. Mm-hmm. If visual effects doesn't work out in the long run, I'll be in Los Angeles. Right. I can do other things. And it was kind of scary. I packed up my car, and one of my friends who lives in Glendale, she was like, well, I have a room opening up. It's me and my boyfriend and another roommate. And I was like, okay, let's do it. Screw it. Yeah. Moved up, came up to Burbank, worked at the studio, got to work on Avengers.
Oh, wow.
Got to work on a couple other projects, and then was let go. I was there for about 6 months.
Yeah.
And they were like, we're consolidating because we don't have as many projects. And I was like, cool. This is great. I'm here for 6 months and it's already gone down the toilet.
Yeah.
Went back to San Diego.
Okay.
For about a year and a half. I think I sort of had like not a mental breakdown, but I was like, do I want to do this? Do I want to do this? Is this what I want to pursue? Do I want to continue getting chewed up and spit back out?
Yeah.
Year and a half later, same company calls me. And it's like, hey, would you be interested in coming back? We've got all these projects lined up. It was like Age of Ultron, Ant-Man, X-Men Days of Future Past, Godzilla, Ninja Turtles, like all these movies. And I said, oh, man, internal dialogue. If I go to L.A., I cannot leave. There is no going back.
This is it now.
I have to 100% commit. So I did. That was December 2013. And it's February 2018, and I'm still here.
You're still here,
still
kid.
Here.
You're still here.
Yeah.
But you have, you know, this is a, I don't want to call it a day job, but it's like one part of your skill set.
Yeah.
And you still have big dreams and big goals. I mean, I imagine you want to still make films. You want to make pictures.
Yeah.
You want to be in the pictures, kid.
Of course.
And this is also a weird era, 2013. By then, new media is starting to really
take digital
shape.
Is like skyrocketing.
It's gone from cat videos on the internet to a living.
Yeah.
That you and I are both thankful for, and as much as it hurts at times and spits us back out when we want, we can talk about that. But where do you sit now? Like, how do you want to take over the world, man?
It's a good question. It's a really
Thank
good.
You.
It's a good question. I like the questions that you bring up. No, but it's crazy because you're right. Digital media totally took off, and I think the big thing that I sort of saw, and for better or for worse, it's worked out to an extent, is my big thing, because I was the company that I was working at, I was also working there with Hector Navarro.
Navarro, yeah.
And Augustine. And we're doing Hyper Heroes.
Is that where you guys met?
I met them in San Diego. We worked at the same company in San Diego, and we kind of moved up together.
Oh, okay. So it goes back to even.
Yeah, it goes back to San Diego. Gotcha. And those two actually know each other from art school in San Diego.
Gotcha.
But while working at that company, we kept going to lunch, and we kept talking about superheroes over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I started watching, I started watching AMC Movie Talk and all these other shows, and I thought, no one's talking about superheroes.
Right.
Which is completely different than making movies.
Yeah.
But I thought, this is an opportunity to take advantage of this space.
Yeah.
So we started doing it, and, now it's 4 years later? Holy Christ.
I wish people could see the look on your face.
Wow.
Like, oh, boy, I'm old.
4 years later, and it's like, it's crazy. So I think, like, long-term, I love doing this, and I never thought I'd get into podcasts, because I've actually been always an extremely shy kid. So the idea of like going on camera and talking in front of a camera or to an audience, mortifying.
Yeah.
More like at school when I had to do presentations, I was always really good at them.
Yeah.
But Man, the amount of times I have to change my underwear before I did them was ridiculous.
Oh my gosh, sir. How do you click it on then? Because I am tremendously shy.
Yeah.
Social anxiety, not as much as now as I used to be, but like 6th, 7th grade, I wouldn't even look you in the eyes or talk to you if I didn't know you. But something clicked in. That's why I knew I was a performer. How did you click that in? Because you're great. You're entertaining. You know what to do.
Well, thank you. I honestly think it just came from consistency, doing it every single week. We got into the regiment of just every week, me, Augie, and Hector.
We would do it.
Yeah. And then Hector went off and did stuff for Geek and Sundry. Mm-hmm. And he was like, hey, do you guys want to come do a live show on Twitch?
Yeah.
First response was, live? Second was, what is Twitch? But we went and we did this live show, and the response was so positive from the live viewers that I thought, oh, maybe I'm not that bad at this.
Right.
Then they gave us a show on there, and I think between doing that and doing stuff on my own and now doing stuff at Hyper RPG, and even Screen Junkies has let me come on and do stuff for them.
Yeah.
I've been on Collider or on Schmoes.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, for me, it just became repetition. Just do it and do it and do it. And there's a lot of times where I would do a show or an episode of something, and I'd look back and like, I don't feel like my point was strong enough. I feel like something was. So I've always sort of tried to work on it a lot. And I think that really was the key. And now, honestly, if I were to have to go in front of a stage and do something or talk about something, I'm actually really comfortable. I love it, oddly enough.
I'm glad you said that, because I'm going to pull back this wall here. And
Oh, my God.
I'd love to one day do some live Knapsack Files. Well, and you got this crew you're talking about. You work these repetitions.
Yeah.
You know, Augustine's great, and Hector Navarro is just such a natural, such a superstar to me. I worked with him on the Walking Dead show on Screen Junkies.
That's right.
And so you're surrounded by a good team.
Yeah, they're like super passionate people. The thing that works so well with us is that we love the thing that we love, and like we love to talk about it.
Yeah.
And we did it all the time at lunch. So it was perfect. It was like, here's a microphone. Mm-hmm. Let's record it and just upload.
Yeah.
And honestly, we thought, it's probably not going to do that well. And it caught on. Like, it took some time, but eventually it caught on. Then we started doing trailer reactions, and those were received really well. Mm-hmm. And I think the big thing why those were successful was it wasn't just, hi, we're here to watch the trailer play.
Right.
And when it ends, if you liked our reaction, leave a comment. Bye. The big thing I told them was, look, if we're going to do trailer reactions, let's actually build a conversation around it. And let's bring the knowledge that we have from comic books and other movies.
Yeah.
And let's kind of break it down and talk about some of the intricacies of the trailer and whatnot. And I think that's what really caught on. And people are like, oh, these people are actually having a conversation about superhero stuff and a trailer, other than just being like, hi, subscribe, see you next week.
Yeah, I see a lot of that too.
Yeah.
It's still an entertainment, and I think that's
fun.
That's
got
to be key. Like, you got to broadcast, you got to talk, you got to put on a show. Mock show, as we used to yell at the Beatles in Germany. Do you feel, because it sounds like your story is similar to others in a lot of ways, but you're an individual, Adam. similar sense of, this pops up.
Yeah.
Now, I'm talking professionally Star Wars and Game of Thrones. That's great. You know, I can see how, if you would have told me 10 years ago, I'd have been like, number one, I get paid for that. Two.
Yeah. That's the crazy part.
Okay. Uh-huh. So it makes some sense for me, and it's close to my radio upbringings. But I also was a writer for a while, writer at heart, and a content creator. Like, sometimes I feel bad I'm just talking about other people's work when I'm a creator myself.
Right.
But for you, do you feel, as you start to, you know, succeed in this way, and career paths change, are you too far away from where you wanted to set out, that little boy making a lightsaber frame by frame? Is that still on your horizon or in your plans?
Look, man, I'll tell you one thing about visual effects.
Yeah.
I don't miss it.
Visual effects, great.
Right.
And we can talk about that.
You're talking about filmmaking. Yeah. The one thing that I will say that, yes, even though it's sort of like I was on a path and I feel like I made a left instead of a right, the one thing that I feel like is great about that, about kind of doing it this way is, and look, it's a small fan base, but I have somewhat of a fan base. And the great thing about it is I can make something, show it to that fan base, and get immediate feedback.
Yeah.
And to me, that is so valuable to have a fan base that you can have one-on-ones with about your content, about things that you're trying. So to me, I love it because now, so my friend and I, who were originally doing the feature 7 years ago, we're going back to that project. We're going to go back into that world. We're going to turn into a web series. We're going to do an RPG on it. We're going to do all these things. And now it's great because there's an audience built in.
Yeah.
So we can do all these. We can do an RPG show, do it in front of an audience, and they can tell us, oh, this is great, or, oh, maybe this would work better, and have immediate feedback and make adjustments. So that way at the end, like, as the more you do it, the better it gets.
Yeah.
Same thing with a web series. We want to make a pilot. We want to put it out there. And because of the fan base, we can get immediate feedback from people and say, like, what works? What doesn't work? What should we adjust? How are you feeling about it? Basically what they do here in LA.
Yeah.
Where you go to a test screening and they give you a ballot and they're like, fill it out. What doesn't work? What does?
You need your third act needs fixing.
Exactly. So to me, that is hugely advantageous to have that, because nowadays you put something out there and people are just going to rip it apart.
Ooh, it's tough.
So much.
It's tough. I have not looked at a YouTube comment on any show I've been on in well over a year. Well over a year. That includes Schmodowns, places even where I'm generally well-received.
Oh, really?
I just can't do it. Because it's not, that is where it's no longer honest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now it's something else.
I think because I've had to do it for so many different channels, I kind of embrace it. And even, and like, and there are plenty of people who are real janky in the comments.
Yeah.
And I don't,
it's
usually
a nice wave.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I usually don't engage with them. Yeah. Every once in a while though, I'll go in there and I'll be like, hey, have you ever considered making a constructive comment?
Yeah.
So there's actually some value in it.
Yeah.
And a lot, honest to God, a lot of times those people respond with, holy Christ, I didn't think you would actually respond.
You ain't lying, man.
They think they're talking to a blank wall.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing.
I remember Stuckman told me a story about that, too. Yeah. He engaged a guy early on, and the guy was like, oh, wow, I'm a big fan, after he had ripped him apart.
Exactly.
He had ripped him apart and was like, I'm a big fan, man. I just want to get your attention.
100%.
And that's sad. Because, like, look, on Twitter, Facebook, now that I'm dabbling in the Twitch world, which is fun, it's so positive and fun. You're forming a community.
That is different.
Yeah, the YouTube comments are just not getting better.
People like to drop bombs and run.
Yeah.
And when you engage with them, they're like, oh, God, I have to defend myself or have something to say. Ooh.
Monsters.
Yeah.
I want to go back to this point because what you're telling a great story here and you're clearly talented and have some drive and we all face obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something interesting in your story. You come up, you make this leap of faith. You're Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade, all right? Penitent men shall pass. And you make the leap of faith.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't work out. 6 months, you say, you lose your job and you decide to move back home.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting decision.
2 hours away.
two hours away. Well, but it doesn't matter. San Diego or Topeka, Kansas. Doesn't matter. We know as mature, common sense based adults, that's not a failure. That's a readjustment. At the time though, were you like, I failed, I've tried, I took a swing and I missed. And what were you thinking at that time? It's a fascinating point in your story.
I think the first 3 months for me was sort of a nice breath of fresh air because, honestly, for people who don't know visual effects, it's long, long days.
You're not sounding too happy about your visual effects time.
No. I mean, honestly, like, look, working on The Avengers is great. Working on a lot of other movies is great. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, the things I'm doing now are way more rewarding.
Gotcha.
One, because people actually know that you're doing that thing.
Right.
But, yeah, I think the first 3 months for me was great because I sort of got to a reset. Mm-hmm. Once we got past the 3 month, 6 month, 9 month part, going into a year, it kind of started to hit me of like, am I failing at life?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to, I feel like I'm slowly starting to spiral. And I honestly, my motivation sort of went from 100% to like negative 20.
Wow.
And I was just not motivated at all. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to make anything. I had considered maybe going back to school and maybe doing something in like biotech.
Wow.
Yeah. Like complete 100% 180 from where I was. And mostly because my mom works in that industry. So she was like, look, I can help you. Maybe there's opportunities and all that sort of stuff. So I was like, maybe that's just the path I need to go on. Maybe I'm not just not cut out for LA and the industry and what it is and how it treats you. Maybe I just need to do this thing. So first 3 months was very much a reset. After that, very much a spiral downward. And I think after 12 months was like, I almost didn't even want to come out of a room. Sort of a thing. I just wanted to be in a room, in a dark room alone, just watch movies. I could not, like, I legitimately could not find work. It was the weirdest thing.
What's Adam doing? He's watching A Clockwork Orange again in the dark.
That's what I was doing. I was watching Kubrick and Rocky movies and anything that would try to, like, boost my motivation, especially, like, Rocky type movies where it's like, okay,
oh, okay.
Like I need to feel better about something. And
so you're very aware of what you're feeling.
Oh, I knew I felt like a dirty sock.
It's an altered state. You're not like accepting it as truth, but you're like feeling this.
Yeah. And it was rough. And like, because of my relationship and like, there's like a death in the family and stuff. Mm. I think I just really honed in on that. And that's all I thought of. And it just brought me down incredibly. So then when I got to, a year and a half and I get this call to come up and do this job, I'm like, oh my God, salvation.
So you had, so that was going to be my follow-up.
Yeah.
Then. So year and a half, you're back home, you're on the bed and you're watching movies in the dark. The same company, a company that maybe you didn't like, but you didn't hesitate then. You were like, I mean, it sounded like earlier you said, yeah, do I want to do, am I ready for this?
Right.
This is it. Yeah, I love that you're like, this is it. I either go or I don't or I stay.
Yeah, yeah.
Any hesitation or here we go again or where's your mind?
It was a little bit of both. It was a little bit of here we go again. It was also a little bit of like, well, if this doesn't work out, you need to really focus on building up relationships with people. Because I think that's the thing I didn't do the first time. I would kind of go to work, go home,
right.
Go to work, go home. I didn't go out and I didn't meet people. I didn't build relationships. And I think if you're going to come to LA or be in a creative industry, you need to build relationships with people. It's extremely important.
Yes.
So I think that was the key the second time was also because we were starting to do our YouTube thing. It was a great way for me to be like, okay, I'm going to go meet people. I'm going to meet this creator, that creator. And that helped tremendously.
It is. I cannot emphasize enough that you're 100% right.
Yeah.
I go back to my groundling days, and this isn't my interview, my story, and people have heard it before, but it's like, I did pretty good in groundlings until the end, training. Everyone goes down there and trains, and I had a good time. Surrounded by wonderful, talented people, many who eventually went to work at SNL, whether on camera or behind the scenes, went to work at Mad TV, all these things. And I'm not saying that if I become closer friends with them that I'd be on that path.
Right.
But when they get out of those shows, they're making movies and they're bringing in people that they work with. And,
right.
And that is when you hear from the outside, if you're in Topeka, Kansas, if you're in San Diego and you hear, you got a network, it's not some like Hollywood, hey, kid, you got a network.
I'm sitting here with a cigar telling you got a network.
You gotta go to the casting couch and that horrible stuff happens. Absolutely. Yeah. But it's not that. It is your mates, your team, your connections, your friends. It's you and I. Now going, and we're both in a similar situation. We lost our full-time gigs, and I can't necessarily offer you a job. You can't offer me a job, but I like to know that, you need a hug. I'll give you a hug.
Look, the first thing that I text you was, let's start the Ex-Employees Drunken Podcast. Let's do it.
Absolutely. And so that is the key. And you have Augustine, you have Hector, but that's your two running mates.
Yeah.
You got a lot going on. And so that is a key to success. And I don't want to put a spotlight on. That's the book of Adam. He's right.
Yeah. And I think also is like, you need to just stay positive. Mm-hmm. Even though you might be in the slumps, things might not be going your way. Mm-hmm. You got to always have a positive outlook and you have to look at the bright side of everything. And you got to tell yourself, how do I get out of this? What do I need to do? How hard do I need to work? That's the thing too, is like a lot of people come to LA and after 6 months, they want to give up because one, they don't have any motivation. Two, they are lazy.
I was for so long in my life.
Yeah.
10 years in my 20s. Wasted. Wasted because I'd rather play Madden.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to play Madden?
What's that up? What are we doing? Let's do it right now.
Which is weird that now you came over tonight. I was just doing my Twitch. So life has changed. But,
I know.
But the
now there's a way to do it where you can actually interact with an audience. And to some extent, monetize.
Yeah, but to some extent. But you also have to be good. Yeah,
of course.
You have to be entertained. I'm not saying I'm there yet on Twitch, but like in life, that's going back. That's a separate conversation.
Right.
Adam and Ken talk Hollywood business will be another show. But this is about you and about that. So you feel, and so you got over this hump. And yes, your job changes, your path changes, obstacles show up, but you're feeling secure. Does it feel like that? Is that victory enough?
Oh, 100%.
I mean, you want more. You want to take
over. Oh, of course. I'm hungry as hell.
Yeah.
That's why I'm a big boy.
So am I.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the key thing. I think for me, it's always like, I knew going into this was like, I'm going to have to work harder than everybody else. And honestly, for the last 2 years, ever since I started working at Screen Junkies, I got to Screen Junkies in the morning. I'd be there till, 6 or 7 o'clock.
Right.
I'd go home and I'd work on my own stuff from, 8 o'clock till about midnight or two.
Yeah, yeah.
Putting in 16-hour days. But now, it's not 16-hour days devoted to just like visual effects, like just one movie. I'm doing my day job and getting paid for it.
Right.
And I'm also doing the thing that I love,
which
is so key. And it's hard sometimes, but once
hard.
You get to that point, it's great.
And I preach making sure you're taking some time for yourself.
Yeah.
Play some hockey again. Do you still do that? Do you put on the skates ever again?
Man, honestly, I haven't owned a pair of skates in so long, but because of the situation that you and I are both in, I may actually take it up because I know that they have a roller hockey league in Burbank.
They do.
Not too far from
they
here.
They do. I used to try. I wanted to play some roller hockey, not ice hockey. Mm-hmm. I had two sticks. Goalie stick. I like being a goalie.
Goalie's fun. My brother's a goalie.
Yeah. Yeah. I shouldn't get on rollerblades and try it here. I shouldn't get it. But yeah, having that outlet's important.
Yeah. I think that's the key thing too, is like a lot of people just want to do the work thing. Mm-hmm. You really got to take care of yourself. And I'm very guilty of not doing that. Like when I moved here, I was in a much better condition than I am now because I would just work 24/7, not devoting time to myself. And now that I'm like, okay, I have free time. Every morning, get up, go do something active, go do something that's like really, really positive towards your body and your mental state.
Right.
Then do work. And then maybe take a break and do something else that's a little physical.
You're a well-rounded, grounded
individual.
I'm
trying, man. 2018. Literally, 2017 ended and I thought, okay.
Yeah.
It's my 30th birthday. I got to sort of live it up and have fun and be 30 and like be 30, turn 30 and have a good time. 2018, I'm like, this is grind time.
It's go
in
time.
In every aspect.
Every aspect, including love.
Well, you know, we'll get there.
We'll get there?
Well, here's the crazy thing.
Come on, you're young, you're healthy, you're dating in L.A. What's the scoop?
Ken, I haven't been on dating in like 6 years. Get out of here.
Get out of here.
Come on.
I mean, I went through like a 40-year dry spell, but...
hey, man, I'm coming up on year 38, so I'm not that far. No, but that's the thing. And I have a lot of people bring that up to me, and they say, you haven't dated, you haven't had a girlfriend in X amount of years, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yes, I understand that. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I don't want to be in a relationship with somebody that I'm not going to devote time to. It's not fair to them, first of all. And it's not fair to me because I'm, you know, there's nothing... It just... I feel like for the next couple of years, I really need to focus on getting on a path where I feel like, okay, I feel good about what I'm doing. And then I can be like, okay, now I feel like I can devote X amount of time to somebody and actually make it feel like I care about them enough.
Well, and here, first of all, number one, anyone out there listening, if you're single and this and that,
in the LA area.
In the LA area, girls, Adams, I endorse Adam. But look, I was single for a long time, a lot of time by choice. Like, I don't think there shouldn't be a pressure to couple up. You know what I mean? That shouldn't be. And what you're saying is tremendously well-balanced. But that's... Love doesn't care about that.
No.
It'll slap you upside the head when you least expect it. I'm in the best relationship of my life. Something that was literally not planned. Even after it began, we both were like, oh, but this isn't a thing that should be. Mm-hmm. And it is, and it's changed my life. So I'm just warning you.
Yeah.
It seems like you got a good plan in place, and God's like, that's funny, Adam. That's funny. I mean... Professionally, we're both in the same boat right now. Sure. We thought we had a good plan in place, and God's like, nah.
You never know what curveball is going to get thrown at you.
Yeah, something better. It's 0-2. I'm going to throw a curveball.
Right. And that's the thing. Look, if I walk out of this door after this podcast and I'm walking I'm walking to the car or whatever, and I bump into somebody and meet them, I'm 100% going to be on board and I'll embrace it.
Well,
and I'll make it work.
I've seen my neighbors. I hope for your sake, it's not here.
That's good to know. So I'll go out the back way
and
dig my way out of here.
Yeah. Life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. John Lennon, right? But it's fun. But it's tough, man. Like you and I, that's why I think I can identify with you. There's something in you that reminds me of me at times. You know, you're just a good bloke, concentrate on other things. So that's why I'm saying stand by to stand by.
I know.
You never know. You never know.
S-foils are still in attack position.
Do you have any family pressure on that? Because you were in relationships. It's not
right.
Like, yeah.
I know that my mom would really like for me to at least be in a relationship. She makes jokes about me having kids and all that sort of stuff. And I get it, you know, like
quote unquote jokes.
Right. Exactly. And I totally understand. She wants to be a grandmother before she dies. I totally get it. Mom, I promise I'm working on it, but it's like, it's a timing thing. I mean, the biggest mistake I made being a younger guy, I was like, when I'm 25, I want to be married. By 30, I want to have two kids.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit balls. If anybody's listening, sorry if I swore, don't do that to yourself.
Your mom's okay with it. Yeah. That is silly. Because I had that too. Funny, 25, it's so funny. When you're like, even in high school.
Yeah.
You're like, when I'm 25, 25 is nothing.
I know.
It's nothing. But I had so many... I always blame the Beatles because I was such a Beatles fan that I'm like, well, the Beatles they made Sergeant Pepper at 26.
Right.
Come on. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. And I mean, I think a lot of it also comes from a European family, like European background.
Yeah.
Most people, at least in where my family's from, Czech Republic, it's very common for people to come out of school, and by 21, they're married and, like, usually will have a first kid at least on the way.
Right.
So I was like, oh, 25, I'm giving myself extra time. Perfect. And then I get to 30, and I'm like, you know what? When it happens, it happens. I'm not in a hurry.
Right. Right. What is your family is a melting pot here, right? You got some Czech in you?
It's just Czech.
It's just Czech?
Yeah. I'm the firstborn American.
You are the firstborn American.
Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating. How many relatives and family members are over here?
So I have one brother, I have two cousins, an aunt and uncle, my mom, who's single, mm-hmm. And my grandma. My grandpa passed away about 7 years ago now.
Okay.
So that's it.
That's it.
Pretty small.
It's fascinating.
Which is kind of crazy because a lot of European families are ginormous.
Right.
Huge, huge families. Multiple cousins, multiple grandparents. But no, just really small, tight family.
My father's side, it's small and tight.
Yeah.
And uncle passed away back in 2012, which affected me greatly. But my mom's side was the bigger family too.
So yeah.
But I know because old country. Either they all come over here on the boats or they
and
stay
it's like,
back.
Oh man, Christmas time is like, whew, it can be nuts. But with our little family, it's like, all right, there's six of us. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, you and I have some obstacles now and a chance to maybe replan what we're thinking of doing.
Yeah.
A second, a third, a fourth chapter, and there's going to be a fifth chapter, mm-hmm. a sixth chapter. That's how life works.
Hey, man, it's a never-ending book.
But in talking about your dominance of the world and of the entertainment industry, where are you looking at right now? As we start to wrap up, where does Adam see himself and career in 5 years?
In 5 years? Good question. I think as long as I stay on the trajectory that I'm on right now, I think in 5 years, I will be hopefully making a feature film,
mm-hmm.
one or two web series, but I want to continue doing this YouTube thing, this hosting.
This YouTube thing.
Yeah, right? Talking about movies, because I love it so much. I want to continue building community. To me, that is so, so, so vital and so important on the internet. A healthy community and fun.
And fun.
Yeah. And I want to be able to go out there and hopefully influence other people to take a chance on the thing that they love. Mm-hmm. If you want to be creative, just start today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't keep putting it off. I think that's the biggest thing that people do. And I'm guilty of this as hell, is wanting to always put things off. Oh, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. Don't do it tomorrow. When this podcast ends, go sign up for a freaking YouTube channel.
Right.
And just start making content. Figure out what's the thing that you love. What are you super knowledgeable about? Go out there and lend your unique voice to it and figure out all the other stuff later, but like get comfortable and do it. So that's sort of my hope is like, I want to continue doing what I'm doing, but I also want to continue elevating it every few months, challenging myself in a creative way, trying out new things and not being afraid to fail. That's, I think my biggest thing that I learned is if you fail, that's totally 100% okay.
Yeah.
Whatever got you to that failure, pick apart the things that really worked and try it again.
Yeah.
And if you fail, just like, you got to keep getting up. If you fall down 7 times, get up 8.
You got to put this all in a book, man.
Eventually. I need more life experiences than I think I'll be able to.
Sure, sure.
But I think that's a long-term goal, is to make a lot of really cool, dynamic digital content,
mm-hmm.
but also have the opportunity to do things like this, do a podcast.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's fun to just come in here and hang out with your friend for an hour.
And then maybe make,
some babies?
Some babies for your mother there.
Cool.
That sounds
good. Hey, Mom. Hope you're listening.
Hey, man. You're working on some stuff now. Tell them what you're working on as we start to close this.
Yeah. Right now, you can find me every single week on Hyper Heroes on Hyper RPG's YouTube channel, youtube.com/HyperRPG. Check out the channel in general. There's a lot of really cool stuff that we do. We've got a lot of RPGs. We're doing a Power Rangers RPG, which airs every Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
Aside from that, my personal YouTube channel is just youtube.com/AdamHlavik. I'm going to start putting out a lot more content on there on a weekly basis. I've also got a podcast, like a video podcast that I'll be putting out, reviewing movies, all that good stuff, and hopefully getting Ken on there to talk about life and other things that we love.
Absolutely. You have me. We'll work out the schedule. You absolutely have me.
Cool. I'll see you on Thursday night.
We'll work out the schedule. we'll have it. No, seriously, I am such a fan of you, and I'm glad this worked out. And I know we're both facing some obstacles here in the interim and in the immediate future. But long term, I have a lot of faith in what you're doing, and you're such a good dude.
Thanks, man.
And I one day I promise you guys out there listening, one day I will bring a guest on the podcast that I hate. but I also am surrounded by such wonderful people with individual stories. And in Adam's story today, you get someone facing down failure, facing down a second chance, which can be harder than the first chance. Mm-hmm. And I think you've got a long way in front of you, my friend.
Thanks, man. Well, and I will say, now I hope that I get to see a lot more of you.
You will.
Good.
See at the unemployment office in the morning. We file the paperwork.
Holding hands while we do it.
That is good. Hey, guys out there listening, I appreciate you. I use guys in a general sense. So people, girls, gals, dogs, cats, ferrets, whoever is listening, thank you for supporting the Knapsack Files. You can follow me on Twitter at Ken Knapsack. We do have the Patreon page. It is patreon.com/the Knapsack Files. New rewards, some goals met, but I want to let you guys know about the Discord server. I've started that. And here's the thing. I was like an old dog learning a new trick, and I was like, what is this? Like a new space Reddit? But we have started a community there, and Adam talked about the positivity of a community. It's not just a place for you to go on and talk about my shows or me. There's some channels there for that if you have guest suggestions and everything. But if it's part of the rewards on Patreon, you go in there. We have created a community of a daily Discord topic where we talk about questions about life. Sometimes it's silly. Sometimes it's serious. We have a personal help desk channel. If you're facing some problems, you want to talk to a stranger and just hear a comforting voice, that's there. And we have a section for, you know, if anyone knows a good pasta for my spaghetti tonight, we have that. It's that type of thing. What Adam's talking about is so right. Building a community, that's what's going on over there. It's over on the Patreon page. And don't forget, check out audible.com/the Knapsack Files. I have that there as well. Free audiobook download and a 30-day trial if you say my name. For Adam, for me, for this sweet, sweet dark stout beer that has puckered our lips.
Woo!
We'll see you guys next time here on the Knapsack Files.